Muted.
Good morning, and welcome to the Rolls-Royce Holdings PLC 2013 half-year results conference call. Throughout this call, all participants will be in listen-only mode, and afterwards there'll be a question and answer session. And just to remind you, this conference call is being recorded. Today, I'm very happy to present Jolinda Crowley, Assistant Director of Investor Relations. Please begin, ma'am.
Good morning, everyone, and a warm welcome to everybody to our half-year 2013 results webcast. Just regarding the materials for today, we issued the result via stock exchange announcement earlier this morning. The presentation slides for this call are available both via the WebEx and also via our website. As always, elements of this presentation contain forward-looking statements and are based on our view of the world and our businesses as we see them today. Clearly, these elements can change as the world changes, so please consider them in that context. So for today's webcast, I'm pleased to be joined by our Chief Executive, John Rishton, and our CFO, Mark Morris. John?
Thanks, Jolinda. Good morning. Thanks very much for joining us on the call. I'm going to make a few comments about our performance in the first half of the year, and then Mark will take you through the detail. At first glance, I think that these appear impressive results, but I suspect many of you have already stripped the numbers apart, and you'll have realised that there are some significant one-off benefits, and the true picture is rather more complicated. So while there are some strong elements of the group's performance, our profit continues to be held back, in my view, our view, by a lack of progress on unit cost, and our cash flow is unacceptable. Fortunately, we have significant opportunities to improve both. As you will have seen, we've consolidated Tognum for the first time, and you can see that the contribution has made quite an impact on the results. But the order book is up 15%, or 12% excluding Tognum. Underlying revenue is up 27%, or 9% excluding Tognum. Underlying profit is up 34%, or 32% without Tognum. We've increased our payment to shareholders by 13% and maintained our full-year group guidance. If I measure this first half performance against our priorities, I would say the following. In terms of delivering on our promises, we've made progress. We were all very pleased to see the first flight of the Airbus A350 powered by our XWB engines. The A400M military transport aircraft has achieved certification and is about to enter service powered by our TP400 engines. And we've delivered our first Environ ship that's now in service off the coast of Norway. The second priority, deciding where to grow and where not to, we've continued to invest in capacity around the world. For example, in the UK, we're close to completing a turbine blade facility in Rotherham and an advanced disc factory in Washington, Tyne and Wear. And the USA, we're building a new turbine machining facility at Cross Point in Virginia. In terms of where not to grow, I'm sure you know that we've decided to sell our 50% stake in the RTM 322 military helicopter program, the Turbomeca. On improving financial performance, as I have said, there is plenty of scope for improvement. Our profit increased by 34% in the first half, but as you'll have seen, this includes a contribution of £112 million from the IAE restructuring, as well as benefits from volume growth. Whilst progress has been made in some areas on cost, we need to do much more. In terms of cash, an outflow of £460 million is not acceptable and we must do better, particularly on inventory performance. This will take time and a firm resolve to deliver. I look forward to taking your questions later, but for now, Mark will take you through the details.
Thank you, John, and good morning. As usual, I will draw out the main highlights of the group's financial performance for the period. Tognum has been consolidated for the first time, so I've shown our main trading figures including and excluding Tognum in this chart. You will recall from the prelims that I said we would provide guidance for Tognum separately from the rest of the group this year, because at the start of the year we could not guide for Tognum whilst they were listed. We will continue this way for the remainder of 2013. So the group excluding Tognum first, and I will come back to Tognum later. Overall, the figures show good progression at group level on orders, revenues and profits. But as John said, we have more work to do around cost and cash. The order book is up 12% after booking £14.1 billion of new orders, predominantly in civil, and the order intake in the first half was up 54% compared to 2012. Revenue, up 9%, reflects good growth in OE and services, with all segments displaying overall growth, ranging from 6% to 16%. Overall growth includes a 1.5 percentage point benefit from favourable exchange rates. Profit increased by 32%, which I will cover on the next slide. Turning to cash, We started the year with £1.3 billion and ended with £921 million of net cash, a reduction of £396 million. This predominantly reflects a growth in working capital and continued investment, which I will cover in more detail shortly. We've increased the half-year payment to shareholders by 13% to 8.6 pence, reflecting our continued confidence in the business. So, turning to profit, what are the key components of growth? Increased volume is worth around £103 million, with IE revised trading arrangements contributing £112 million. Within the £24 million other movements, there are a number of positive and negative items around trading mix, R&D, restructuring, foreign exchange and entry fees. Entry fees increased by £76 million relating to where we are on the development of the Trent 1010 and the Trent XW97K programs. We expect a similar benefit over the full year. Restructuring costs are up £25 million in the first half, which includes severance payments relating to the indirect cost reduction and site restructuring activity. The group profit before Tognum was £787 million, up 32%. Our profit from Tognum of £53 million reflects full consolidation compared to our share last year, which was equity accounted. Group cash flow. As usual, I'll just pick out the major themes in this chart that you're all familiar with. Firstly, net working capital, which increased by £803 million, reflects a number of moving parts. The main items are inventory, which increased by £261 million due to volume with no improvement in our turns, was disappointing and is receiving intense focus. And civil total care debtors, which increased by £240 million, representing a combination of new deliveries and shop visits. CapEx and intangibles were up £402 million and includes £261 million of capital expenditure and £141 million of intangibles. Remember, intangibles are capitalised development costs, certification costs, recoverable engine costs and software. The trading outflow of £208 million is before payments of £250 million to our main stakeholder groups, pensioners, taxes and our shareholders. Tognum's trading cash flow of £62 million is after paying a £60 million dividend to Daimler. Looking to the full year, we continue to expect cash flow excluding Tognum to be around break-even. Turning to the business segments, Civil has seen strong order flow during the period. The order book increased 14%, with intake of £10.9 billion that included orders for Trent engines for over 200 wide-body aircraft. Trent engines now make up over 90% of Civil's order book as our market share continues to grow. OE revenue increased by 8%, which reflects an 11% increase in engine deliveries, partly offset by adverse mix. Services revenue was up 3%, broadly in line with the growth of the installed thrust base. Profit increased by 59%, reflecting the benefit of increased volume, £112 million from the IE restructuring and £76 million higher entry fees, partially offset by higher restructuring and product launch costs. Remember that the IE benefit is a first half effect compared to 2012, because the deal was completed in the first half of last year. Profit performance in the second half will be lower than the first half due to the phasing of entry fee receipts and R&D. Consequently, for the full year, we continue to expect modest growth in Civil's revenue and strong growth in profit. Defence has performed slightly better than we anticipated, but there remains a lot of uncertainty regarding sequestration and broader austerity measures which governments have to contend with. This is evident in the order book, which contracted by 4%, and the low growth in services revenues as a consequence of reduced flying hours. OE revenue increased while engine deliveries were unchanged, benefiting from a favourable mix and increased export sales. Profit increased by 10%, reflecting OE volume growth, favourable revenue mix, and a lower R&D charge. A good first half performance now gives us the confidence to improve guidance for Defence for the full year, from a modest reduction in profit to broadly flat. Our marine business is a mixed story in terms of performance in the first half. Order intake was strong at £1.7 billion and included a £0.8 billion enabling contract for the MOD, which contributed to the order book increase of 10%. Excluding submarines, order intake was up 4%. Top line growth was also good. Revenue increased by 16%, reflecting OE volumes in the offshore sector and services growth in offshore and naval. Foreign exchange benefits made up 3% of the growth. Profit performance was disappointing, having decreased by 8% due to adverse revenue mix, pricing pressures, warranty costs, partially offset by cost reduction and a foreign exchange benefit. Bid activity remains encouraging, and good order cover for the second half gives us confidence to maintain the full year guidance for a modest growth to Marine's revenue and profit. In energy, there are some large percentage changes, but remember, numbers are small in the context of the group. We are clear that the performance of this segment is unacceptable, and we continue to explore avenues to improve the returns in the segment. OE growth of 6% was driven by increased demand in oil and gas, and the 12% services growth was driven by higher spare parts sales and better capture of market share. Losses reduced by £3 million, and we expect some improvement in energy's profit for the full year. Finally, turning to power systems, our new segment. Let's just remind ourselves that Power Systems, which was formerly known as Engine Holding, comprises of our Bergen business and Tognum. This chart illustrates the relative size of the two businesses and the impact of Tognum moving from being equity accounted in 2012 to full consolidation in 2013. As you can see, Tognum had no impact on revenues in 2012, and its profits contribution represented our share of profits after tax. This chart shows the performance of Power Systems as if Tognum had been fully consolidated in both years, so as to provide a trading comparison. Power Systems' order book increased by 14%, and new orders were up 8%. OE revenue was down 9% due to weak sales in onshore oil and gas, where the US fracking market is reducing gas prices, resulting in lower investment in new projects. Similarly, in the aftermarket, weak commodity prices are resulting in reduced activity in mining, where lower use of equipment is depressing spare parts sales. Profit reduced by 45% as a consequence of the revenue fall, higher R&D and some warranty adjustments. We expect the second half performance to improve based on strong order cover and continue to guide Tognum's revenue and profit performance as broadly flat for the full year. Turning to financial strength, we continue to place considerable importance on maintaining an investment grade rating given the long-term nature of our business and having strong liquidity. During the period, we took advantage of favourable market conditions to raise £1 billion of new funds, which provides a combination of refinancing and capital for general corporate purposes. So, to wrap up, we've continued to see good order flow and top-line growth across the company. Profit growth reflects the benefit of volume and the IE restructuring, with other, largely one-off, impacts broadly offsetting each other. While some progress has been made on cost, there is still much to do, as there is around cash generation, particularly working capital. We are maintaining our full-year group guidance of modest revenue growth and good profit growth and a cash flow of around break-even. So with that, I'll hand back to John.
Thanks very much, Mark. Look, we're now very happy to take any questions that you have. Over to you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, could you please press 01 on your phone keypad now in order to enter the queue? And then after you're announced, just ask your question. And if you find your question has been answered before it's your turn to speak, simply press 02 to cancel. And there'll be a brief pause while questions are being registered. Our first question is from the line of Rupinder Devegh at Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead with your question. Your line is now open.
Yep. Good morning, everybody. I've just got two questions, perhaps one for John and one for Mark. John first, just a question around the kind of four C's. You've talked about the progress that needs to be made on, you know, cost and cash. Can you just give us a bit more color around, you know, what's happened in terms of the concentration, if you like? You know, are you now happy with the portfolio post the disposals and energy? And in terms of customers, you know, what progress has been made there? And second question perhaps for Mark, on the IE, what should we be now thinking for the full year in terms of the IE payment? And are there any expectations at this stage of any RSPs in the second half of the year? Thank you.
Thanks very much. I'm very pleased that you've asked me about the other C's rather than cost and cash. That's always a good start to any discussion. I think we've made good progress on customer. The organisation is really starting to get that. We're starting to measure things well, and the feedback that I'm hearing from our customers has improved, which is always welcome and reassuring. In terms of our performance, I'd just highlight civil large engines. We've been at purchase order 100% all of this year on all the products. Marine, which was a drag, as I think you're all well aware, the performance of purchase orders improved significantly. We're now well over 70% on time. You may remember that I've said in the past that if you went back 2 years, we were about 10%. Last year, we were running at 55%. We're now running at close to 75%. So good progress in terms of customer, in terms of delivery, good performance, I think, in terms of quality. I think we've still got much more work to do in what I would call responsiveness to issues. So the nature of our business is such that there are always going to be issues. We need to respond much more rapidly and effectively to those issues, and we're turning our attention to those. But overall, I'm very pleased with the progress that we've made in terms of customer and the attention it's getting within the organisation. In terms of concentration, I think that, you know, for me, that there were two parts to that. The first part is the one that you referred to, which is, if you like, around the portfolio. And I've been long clear, I think, that the energy portfolio didn't make much sense to me. It's quite clear from the results again this half that we've still got more work to do on that. The good news within energy is they've made lots of progress in terms of the product, in terms of the customer. They're starting to really get to grips with their cost base. We've got much more work to do there. So we haven't finished our thinking on that yet. more thinking to do. And as in all businesses, we'll continue to address portfolio issues as we see them and as opportunities arrive. And I think the sale of our 50% holding in the RTM 322 helicopters is just evidence of opportunistic in some ways and a view that wasn't something we wanted to invest in at this point in time. So there are always going to be those kind of activities going on. But I think, you know, energy would be the area that, you know, I'm still most concerned about from its, you know, from the overall financial performance within the group. Again, nothing new for you there. And in fact, you're probably bored of me saying that, but I can assure you lots of work going on behind the scenes. The other thing that concentration means within the group is, you know, I want people to concentrate on doing their job to the best of their ability and not be distracted by other things. So there's two elements to it, and I think we're seeing some progress there. Mark, do you want to talk about IAE and revenue sharing partners?
If I have to. Rupinder, I think I've got your question, which really was just looking, I guess, it's H1 and then the full year and trying to sort of gather to the guidance when we look at profits at the group level of 32% and obviously it's civil even higher. The IE question really is a phasing issue and, of course, an impact of comparing H1 with H1. So if we go back to 2012, we were under the, as I refer to them, the old trading arrangements. And of course, if you recall back then, we originally guided, and I guess the estimation has gone up from then, about 140 for the full year, and obviously when we updated it became 92 for the half year. And of course, this year I've given you some numbers of 112 million for the first half. As I think I sort of said in my presentation, except a, you know, a similar benefit for the full year, you know, what in terms of just looking at the phasing of how we bring those profit numbers back to where our guidance was, really what you've got are some phasing issues. You've got the IE impact that only happens in the first half and impact much less in the second half, and then phasing issues of entry fee receipts, which are front-end loaded, and R&D charge, which rises in the second half. And so those will bring those profit numbers more in line with the guidance that we've given. So hopefully that answers your question, Rupin.
Yep, thank you.
Our next question is from the line of Ben Fidler at Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yes, good morning, guys. Few questions, if I could, please. Firstly, just to understand within civil aerospace some of the moving pieces driving the profit performance there, and I guess specifically if you're able to just give us a bit more detail on what the level of product launch costs were in civil aerospace and the restructuring costs there, just to try and sort of get a view of the true underlying progress that you're making, John, on the unit cost base.
Do you want to reel off your questions and then we'll hit them one at a time, or is that it?
Yeah, no. I'm afraid there's some more. The second one is, I suppose, just to understand your confidence level as to why Tognum's profit performance will be so second-half loaded this year and why there's such a second-half improvement, just to understand your confidence around that. And the third question that I had is just around how your opening statements clearly talk about the progress you're making on costs and cash, but as you say in the press release, this will take time and firm resolve to deliver. What sort of timescale are we looking at to deliver those benefits in your mind?
Okay, let me maybe hand over the civil question to Mark, and maybe Mark, if you talk about Tognum as well, and then I'll talk a little bit about cost and cash.
Okay,
that's okay.
Yep. So look, in civil, we sort of highlighted again. We had volume growth. You've got the IE restructuring, and we've got a number of things that we sort of put in other. You know, product launch costs are sort of in the tens of millions, low tens of millions. And on unit cost, I mean, we've had some progression on what I'll call indirect and CNA, which will be around the sort of 10 million mark. But I'm not sort of getting into sort of breaking out all the other components that we've got in here. I mean, we'll just go down a rabbit hole, frankly. But you know, I think the key point to say is that we're seeing progression.
Yeah, I mean, where I guess, and thank you for some of those numbers you shared. I'm not expecting you to give full disclosure of that. My question was really coming from, you know, you had 6% revenue growth in civil. If we strip out the increase in the IE effect and the increase in partnership receipts, arguably neither of which are trading items, you could argue, we had 6% revenue growth and the underlying profitability fell. Even before we start looking at what you put on the balance sheet on Total Care, et cetera. And it's just to understand, you know, know, what's going on in driving some of those unit costs? Hence my question about, was it a big warrant, you know, was it a big product launch cost? Was it a big restructuring cost? Because it looks like unit costs have clearly gone up quite significantly in civil aerospace.
What I would say, Ben, is that there's a raft of one-offs in the negative 24. We've broken out the IAE. You can clearly see the RSPs. But my perspective is pretty simple. We got volume growth. We had the IAE benefit that we've broken out. Then there were a whole raft of broadly one-offs that broadly offset each other. Which, if you take from what I've just said, what it says is that we didn't make much progress on unit cost or costs within aerospace. We made some progress in other areas. But the biggest issue that I have, if I sort of pick up your last question in terms of cost and cash, really centres around the aerospace area, and it particularly centres around civil. Defence actually did make some progress on cost, and is working hard on it. So if I narrow down where I am least pleased with the progress, it is civil aerospace in terms of cost. There are other areas in civil aerospace where I'm very pleased with the progress, and I gave you some examples in the response to customers. So, in broad terms, cost progression in aerospace is almost virtually nothing, and we have to address that because it is our biggest cost base and our biggest issue. And as I think I've said to a number of you at various times, you know, when you get into sort of why is that? In part, it's just human nature, I'm afraid. So let me just talk a little bit about what's been going on. My simplistic story is that when you announce record profits, which we've just done again, when you announce record order book, which we've just done again, when you announce, you know, record everything, then people have a difficulty understanding why it is that I'm talking about cost. But they really do have a difficulty. Now, you guys kind of get it immediately. But you look at things from a slightly different perspective to most people. If I break our company down, the defence guys kind of get the cost issue because there's something called sequestration in the US, and they've been through the spending review in the UK, and they kind of get it, and their world has changed. The energy guys get it because of the environment that they're operating in. Our marine guys are starting to get it and are making progress in terms of their cost reduction, as we have to, because we've got a very high cost base, largely being based in Scandinavia, which is uncompetitive. So they get it. The area, understandably, that is struggling the most is the area where the growth and the benefits of the growth are all flying through, which is civil aerospace, because civil aerospace is in a boom period. So what we did, as you're well aware, is I got a group of six senior managers to go away and look at this and come up with a whole load of ideas. They finished their report. We've had a great discussion with those guys. We had a great discussion with civil management. Civil management are quite clear on the opportunities that exist within their business, and there are significant opportunities. We're now grappling with the hardest part. So I've got people's heads at the management team in the right place. We've done a lot of work in terms of identifying opportunities. We're now moving to delivering the opportunities. Now, in some businesses, and I've worked in some, it's pretty easy. I would suggest in the banking industry, it's usually pretty easy to reduce costs. You kind of know where your costs are, you just get rid of them. In our industry, particularly in civil aerospace, when you're dealing with gas turbine engines, and the biggest part of those costs are the engines, it isn't quite as easy. It takes engineering resource, it takes time, energy, effort. You've got to go through regulatory reviews. Some of the cost benefits are associated with how can you get longer on-wing service to reduce servicing costs. Some of the benefits are around how do we drive repairs into our services business rather than replacement, which is something we are comparatively weak at relative to our competition, and there's lots of opportunity there, but it takes time. Other areas, and Mark mentioned one, our indirect cost reduction program, we're making good progress on that, but frankly, you don't see any benefit of that because we've got a restructuring cost which offsets the financial benefits at this point, but they'll flow through it at some point in the future. So in simple terms, if you're looking for cost benefit, unit cost performance in aerospace, you're not going to find much. And that's a short answer or a long answer, I should say, to your simple question.
Yeah, it's a very interesting answer. Thank you very much. And I guess, you know, just drilling down a bit further with that question, so in terms of time scale, I mean, how long does that take to push through that scale of cultural change and the inevitable scale of restructuring change in what is a very complex business and supply chain in civil aerospace? I mean, is it 2 years? Is it 5 years? When do you think you start to really see benefits come through?
Were you sitting in my board meeting yesterday?
I was actually, yes. But I'm small, so I'm easily missed.
Because as you would expect, the similar questions are getting asked there. And, of course, rather perversely, as the guy who sort of has a reputation for cost and cash management is sort of puzzling to people why it's not happened overnight. I think the answer, Ben, is back in what I was saying about the complexity of the changes that we need to make here that will determine the time. As you might well expect, I'm not going to get hung up on a timescale on this. What I can do is absolutely assure you that it has a lot of attention at the moment, and we are determined, I am determined, Mark is determined, the management team in aerospace is determined to make progress, because it is affecting what we can do and where we can invest, as is the cash performance. And people are starting to understand that. They're starting to understand that if we don't improve our cost of cash performance, we can't invest as much as we want in new products and do the things we want to do in terms of people, training, infrastructure, products, all those kind of things. So I'm not going to get on a hook in terms of a week on Friday, but it's going to take us some time. It's hard.
Okay.
Well, best of luck with it.
I think you had one other question, Ben. I think we've ambled around probably one and three. So you had a question about...
it was just Tognum, the confidence level around. Obviously, there's a very big improvement that needs to be delivered in H2. You mentioned R&D phasing. Is that? It was just understanding why you're so confident on what has got to be a big step up in the second half that it will be delivered.
But again, this is a much shorter cycle business. They've got good order cover as we go into the second half. And again, this is a very much a higher volume business. It obviously helps on the overhead recovery. We've got some phasing on R&D, and obviously we had some warranty adjustments in the first half, which won't repeat in the second half. So those are the sort of things as to why we're confident that Tognum will end up in consistent with the guidance that we originally gave.
Ben, what we've seen in that business is the first part of the year was dreadful, and it's been improving ever since. So the trend gives us confidence as well. And that's what you've sort of seen if you look at the direct competitors with Tognum. If you look at their kind of results, yeah, you saw the same kind of thing in their first quarter and second quarter results. So the trend is positive. Order coverage is high. The management team at Tognum, I think, understood the realities that they were facing at the start of the year, which means that we don't have to change guidance because I think they got it right the first time round.
Thank you very much.
Our next question is from the line of Robert Stallard at RBC. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Thanks very much. Good morning.
Good morning.
I've just got a couple of questions on the aftermarket, if that's okay. In civil, I was wondering if you could give us some idea of what trend was up in the quarter and how that contrasted with the RB211 aftermarket.
Look, well, we don't sort of break out individual engine programs each through. I mean, I think as you'll take from the numbers, the aftermarket was up 3%, broadly in line with our thrust base. I mean, within that, obviously, in aftermarket revenues, we've got a combination of T&M and long-term service agreements. And within that, of course, we've got a product range, some of which are new and young, coming on and building up in terms of LTSAs and so forth, and some of which are coming naturally to the end of their life cycle, and you've referenced to some of them in the RB211. I mean, what I would say on RB211 is that the 535 continues to perform well. And of course, as you'd expect, we try and manage the life cycle to extend life. And whilst, as aircraft get parked and engines come off, we also have a part of our business which we call parts trading, which will buy up parts to help reduce overhauls and extend the life. On the RB211, sort of 767 fleet and the old 747 fleet, of course, they are older and much smaller fleets, so the impacts are much smaller. But by and large, and as I've as we've guided, when you look at H1 versus H2, civil as well as every other division will see growth in revenues in H2, both at the OE level and at the aftermarket level.
So do you expect that aftermarket growth rate to accelerate in the second half, or be similar to what we've seen in the first half?
Well, I think we've given only revenue guidance for the year. I'm not going to start breaking out. All I've said is it's higher than the first half in terms of absolute revenues.
Okay, and then on the defence side, you mentioned that there's a lot of uncertainty here, but the defence aftermarket here, how do you expect this to progress given this lack of visibility? Is it possible to say, do you expect this to be similar in the second half, or could it possibly be down?
Well, all of our divisions, we are expecting for H2 to have higher revenues than H1, both at the OE and aftermarket level. And again, I don't want to assume they're massive swings, but I mean, again, we generally tend to have a bit of a biasing generally between H1 and H2. And in certain cases, particularly when we're dealing with government bodies and quasi-government bodies, we tend to find that there tends to be some behavioural activity that they start with their budgets at the beginning of the year and they're very cautious, and then they sort of try and make sure they spend them by the end of the year. So you get a little bit of that behaviour in some areas, and defence, I guess, is no exception. Of course, with the continuing uncertainty around sequestration and just generally austerity measures in defence, I think, and as I alluded to in our results, maybe some suppressed flying hours in the first half that may change slightly in the second.
Okay. And then just finally on energy, you mentioned that there's still work to be done. Are you contemplating some relatively radical action here, like potentially selling or spinning off or joint venturing some of the businesses here?
I'm not going to get drawn into any specifics, but you know what I've said and what you've all told me and what everybody knows is that the financial performance of that segment is totally unacceptable, and we need to address that. There are a whole raft of things, as I said, that we've already done in terms of improving the product, improving our customer position, reducing our costs, improving deliveries. All these kind of things are going on. We have to address those issues. If we break the energy down into its two main parts, the issues. Oil and gas is a good business, as I've said on a number of times, but it's small. We've got a good market share. It's basically us and GE. It goes fine. Power generation is much more troublesome for us in terms of financials, where we are a tiny, tiny, tiny player. We're looking at what we should or shouldn't do, how we could or couldn't do it, and when we've got our minds around that, we'll let you know.
Great. Thank you very much.
Our next question is from the line of Nick Cunningham at Agency Partners. Please go ahead with your question. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Good morning. I think it falls to me to ask some of the nerdy rather than the philosophical questions. An elephant issue as far as the margin outcome in civil is concerned is a mix between the linked and unlinked engine sales. And judging from the big rise in the total care receivable and the very small rise in capitalised engine cost, it was mostly linked in the first half. Is that going to continue to be the case for the rest of the year? And is there any indication as to how that's going to look next year? And also, just to clarify on IAE and the entry fee receipts, I think what you're saying is that you've had most of them for the year and there'll be only a little bit in the second half. I just want to make sure I got that right. And then final detailed question. Just, I've sort of lost track of what the basis is for Tognum in saying that you're going to do something similar this year compared to last year. So would you just be able to clarify what last year's basis was? Thank you very much.
Yes, so let me just take those answers in reverse order for a second. So the Tognum stuff is actually on the charts. We showed you, I think, the second to last chart, which shows power systems, what I've called with Tognum at 100% trading. And what we said is that we were guiding revenues and profits broadly flat. And if you want, I can give you the breakout for those, which revenues, I mean, broadly they're around about 1.3 billion. Sorry, for the full year. Are you looking at the full year?
Yes.
Just give me one second here. I'll come back. Let me get the few in a moment. Let me try and see the other questions.
Thank you.
Your second question. Sorry, what was your second question?
I was looking at clarifying the IAE and entry fee receipts.
Oh, yeah. Your assumption was right on question two. Yes.
Right.
Most of it is taken in the first half.
And then the linked and the unlinked ratio.
Yes. Okay. So, in terms of the net TCA debtor, yes, it's risen. And again, you remember there are two components to that. We've got the combination of more engine deliveries, and again, with the linked, we get the benefit of we get the impact of clearly revenue ahead of cash, which builds up the debtor. But on the flip side of that, shop visits will obviously drive down the trade credit, and it's really a combination of those. And I think your question was relating to, has there been a bias towards linked versus recs? And the answer in the first half is yes. I don't want to sort of get into specifics of next, of what happens in H2 and then what happens in next year. And I think you're aware, Nick, that obviously in relation to XWB, as the volumes grow there, that will tend to be rec accounted rather than linked accounted, just because of the nature of the contract we have with Airbus there. And obviously, as those grow, then you can expect some increases in recs versus linked.
Thank you.
For the full year, sorry, I mean, just to give you some broad picture on Tognum's revenues, last year they were about €3 billion and profit of around about €300 million. And again, we've guided flat for the year, so the same again, effectively, for Tognum at 100% level.
Thanks very much.
Our next question is from the line of Andrew Gollan at Investec. Please go ahead with your question. Your line is now open.
Good morning. Just to extend, or two questions really. First one on civil aftermarket, and to extend, I think what Rob was asking earlier on. The growth year on year was 3% civil aftermarket. Could you perhaps give us a split between, or a rough split between time and materials and LTSAs? That would be quite helpful. That's the first one. Second one, again, clarification on the IAE guidance for the full year. Are we talking about roughly €200 million versus the €140 million that you talked about a year or so ago? And the other sort of sub question to the IAE number, can you explain what's exactly going on relative to your expectations? I guess in terms of supplying parts into the V2500 build program or supply parts into the spares system. Just explain why it is outperforming by so much.
Okay, so a couple of questions. The issue around IE, I mean, again, I've given you sort of guidance or you know, indicated for the full year that's a similar effect for the full year. So I guess, you know, around about 200.
Sure.
We'll give you the flavour. Sorry, your last question was?
The last question related to IE was why that is so outperforming where we thought we were a year and a half ago in the context of what's going on within the sort of build program and the spares environment.
Okay. In terms of, I mean, all this reflects is the amount of parts sales and the type of parts sales and therefore the type of margins that we make. I mean, we make estimates, but obviously spare parts sales are relatively short term. You know, they're sort of typically on sort of 30 days, sometimes lead time even less. So it's just a question of what's happening both in T&M and the LTSA market as to what can drive that. And in effect, we've sort of undercalled in the past what those are. And of course, the other part of this is there is some transfers that are ongoing between us and UTC, and we've assumed a timeline for that, and some of those timelines have sort of moved a little bit to the right, so there is some stuff we're doing more that eventually we won't be doing, but again, all of that is factored in. So really it's a combination of the volume's been a little higher, the types of parts we sold have made slightly better margins, and some of the work transfer that was destined to go on a certain schedule is delayed a little bit. Your first question...
Sorry, can I just ask then, do we expect a sort of similar rate of fade from the sort of 200 or so annual number that we were talking about?
I mean, look, when we originally, I'm not going to give multi-year guidance, but when we originally raised the IE effect, what we said is we were going to get an uplift in profit reflecting the revised trading arrangements. And again, just clarifying what they are, you know, in effect, we've gone from being an equity partner to a supplier. We continue to make the parts, you know, we've made, we continue to assemble engines, and we receive, a number of, a value of dollars per engine flying hour on the installed fleet at the point of sale. So those are the sort of revenue sources. And what we've said is, yes, eventually it will start to drift down, but for the first few years it will sort of remain relatively flat.
Okay.
Your first question, just to come back to it, because I did write it down, was a split between T&M and LTSA. I mean, I'm not going to get down into sort of individual breakdowns. What I will say is that our T&M and LTSA between them, if I look at H1 to H1, was slightly up on T&M in the first half. I expect it to be slightly less in the second half, but it will be more than compensated by LTSA revenue in H2. And now that's why we continue to see revenue growth and higher revenues in H2 on aftermarket for civil.
Okay, thank you.
Just to remind all participants that if you have a question, could you please press 01 on your telephone keypad? And if you wish to withdraw that, press 02 to cancel. And we go over to the line of Oliver Brochet of Exane BNP Paribas. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. I would like to focus on three questions, if I may. The first one is on warranties. You mentioned that a couple of times in the prepared remarks. Could you put some more flesh on that for Marine and Tognum? Is there any lumps that we should be aware of there? Second question is on Tognum. Can you update us on your view on the synergies and business opportunities that you found now that you are in complete control of the company? Any good or bad surprises there? And third, on inventory and working capital, you clearly look displeased or even upset about the performance in H1. What has exactly been sleeping? What has been missed? What will you be doing different now?
Very much. Let me take a couple of those and maybe ask Mark to comment as well. In terms of inventory, you're correct. Here's what I would say. There are a number of elements to it. First, I think in some ways most important, we've been driving to improve our customer performance, and our customer performance has been poor in the past. And I gave two examples to an earlier question where civil at 100, large engines at 100%, and marine increasing from 10 to 55 to over 75%. One of the ways that we've achieved that is inevitably the obvious way, which is we put more inventory into the system to make sure that we don't let our customers down. So that's part of it. What we've been unable to do is to drive the performance better so that we have more confidence at the moment in the supply chain. So we're getting there. Supply chain performance has improved significantly, but it hasn't reached the tipping point whereby the inventory is starting to flow through the system more efficiently and effectively. So in simple terms, I've put more inventory in to protect the customers. Supply chain performance has improved, but it isn't yet at the point where we can reduce the inventory buffering and still protect our customers, but we're getting closer to it. The second point is the overall management of inventory within the company, if I could take that as a big bucket. So we set up an aerospace organization, and we're still working through that. So whilst we announced that some time ago at the beginning of the year, anybody who's been involved in large organisation changes know they take some time. And we're getting down to some of the really important elements in terms of inventory control and the actual individuals responsible for ordering, managing stocks within each individual plant. And we're going to centralise that, because at the moment that's still done at a plant level. And in my experience, if that's the case, you never got control over inventory. You need to get control over it at a central level, because all the plants really are still interested in is making sure they don't get beaten up for non-production, so they buffer on the buffer on the buffer. So in simple terms, those are some of the main issues that are going on, and that's why it takes time to get to and why it tries my patience.
Thank you.
In terms of Tognum, on the synergy side, yeah, we've been through the synergies side. I think, you know, what I would say, and I'm not sure I said this before, is it's clear that there are more benefits in terms of marine than there are on the energy side. We're comfortable that there are synergies. We're comfortable that the acquisition is a sensible one. We are pleased with the program and the progress that they're making. Clearly, they have a lot to do with the integration of Bergen into their business. We're already getting benefits from their expertise associated with our Bergen engines in terms of R&D, in terms of knowledge of emissions, in terms of that technical expertise. And we're starting to see some benefits in terms of sales. We've still got a lot more work to do on that area. And whilst Tognum's been around for 2 years, management control has only been for 6 months. But we're working hard on that now, and that's going, I think, as well as I would expect. Warranties, Mark, I don't know if you want to make any comments on warranties.
No, not really. I mean, look, we don't break out individual components of warranty. I mean, what I did allude to, obviously, in the presentation were the two areas where we had increased warranty costs were really around Tognum and Bean.
But there is no big lump that we should be aware of.
No, I mean, look, it contributed to the movements in profit in terms of, you know, affecting adversely that. But no, I don't mean to think there was some sort of material sort of overly sized adjustment, but there was an increase.
Okay.
You know, quite normally, you know, warranty costs, you know, rise and sink, and that's just part of the business cycle.
What I was aiming at is it something that we should be thinking of continuing in the future, or
I hope not. So.
Okay. you very much.
It's, if you want the real answer to that, it's how do I improve my performance to customers? And one of the ways I do that is by making sure that the products are the right quality and it works right first time. So hopefully we should get some benefits. But again, they take a long time to flow through.
Thank you.
Our next question is from the line of Celine Fornaro of Bank of America. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yes, good morning everybody. Thank you for taking the question. My question will be on the marine weak performance on this first half of the year, because even if we compare it historically, I mean, you used to have the Bergen business, which was slightly below, you know, that division margin, and now it's being carved out. So how should we think about the margin progress in the H2? And also, when I look at the big increase in the order book in this division, you know, how is the pricing? Is there a risk that you've been trading sales for pricing? And, you know, should we see that coming through quicker because these orders or this order book is not as lengthy as it used to be, you know, 2-3 years ago? Thank you.
Okay, well, look, the first thing to say, and as I sort of said in the presentation, I mean, we're disappointed with profit performance in marine in H1. There are a number of reasons for that I alluded to. I mean, there's a combination of adverse mix, warranty charges we just talked about, and against, interestingly, some foreign exchange benefit and unit costs. But again, better mix in the second half, good order cover, some non-repeats of some of the one-offs gives us the comfort that that's where we'll be. And, you know, like I think John alluded to when he gave a sort of broader overview of marine, I mean, look, there's sort of three basic segments in there: offshore, merchants, and naval. Offshore, you know, we're seeing some encouraging signs in terms of bid activity, and it's certainly as we look into H2. Services revenue growth has got good opportunity. We've opened up more networks there, and that gives us more access. You know, the merchant business still remains pretty much in the doldrums, but it's only about 20% of the total size of marine and naval. I mean, interestingly, whilst it sort of, you know, you'd argue it sort of sits in terms of defence behavioural patterns, it's performed slightly better, certainly in terms of what we've seen this year and for the rest of the year that we're looking for. So, I mean, I think that's a sort of quick summary of marine, both in terms of where we see profit progression and revenues.
But in offshore, can I just, I mean, do you continue to see pricing pressure on the offshore environment?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, it's a tough market. You know, we're seeing, interestingly, a move, certainly on things like OSVs, to slightly larger ones, which gives us the opportunity to, quote, for more types of equipment on those vessels. But yes, it's a tough environment. And I would say that actually price pressure more than offsets, you know, unit cost, even though they make good progress on unit cost.
And my second question would be if you could split, you know, looking at you, you've done that in the past on the service growth in the civil aerospace division, if you could give us an idea on how much was time and material and on how much was total care on the 3% growth number.
Again, we don't normally break that out, and I haven't actually got it to hand, but I'm sure we can give you that number if you need it.
Thank you.
Our next question is from the line of Sandy Morris at Jefferies. Please go ahead with your question. Your line is now open.
Ah, good morning, everyone. Sounds like the gentleman wasn't sure whether to let me through or not.
Very wise.
Yes.
Very wise man.
You've warned them. A slightly simplistic question, but if I look at civil aerospace and I look at engine deliveries in this first half, What we appear to have is nice volume growth on biz jets, and so Dahlewitz in Germany. And when you say there was a sort of 103 million, whatever it was, volume benefit, I'm assuming that's where it arises. In the meantime, in terms of large engines, we're sort of marking time. And is that the right way to sort of look at it, that, you know, a big chunk of the business is doing just fine and enjoying strong volumes growth, and the rest of it is still kind of sitting there poised to go at some point, or is that just too simplistic?
No, I think, you know, as you say, Sandy, I mean, there's an element of truth that, you know, we've talked about XWB, and certainly in terms of when you look at our investments, we're looking to double capacity for Trent. The XWBs haven't come online yet, and of course, you know, there's a huge order book. So, you know, this year has been one where, yes, of course, in some divisions we've got, you know, more growth on units, but Trent's totally for the year will be, you know, similar numbers to last year. And of course, we're just getting ready for the growth that we'll see that starts in 2014.
Yeah, I think you summarised it very well, Sandy. I think and Mark's point is right. So, yeah, you know, you break it down to the engine types, you kind of see Trent 700 continuing to do well. You're seeing slow and good growth coming in Trent 1000, XWB yet to come, and a slowdown in Trent 900s, which is exactly what you'd expect based on the aircraft sales. And the growth that we're going to get in Trents, which is which is evident from the order book, but as Mark said, sort of 90% of the order book it relates to Trents, is yet to come, and it will come as the volume of Trent thousands for the 787 grows, as the aircraft sells more, and I'm sure it will. And it will come even more when the A350 comes online and starts to sell, as it will. So that's what really drives the volume growth. So one of the issues that we as the company grapple with in terms of cost is managing the preparation of significant growth in large civil engines, which hasn't happened yet but will happen, while we're trying to manage our costs against that the future work we've got to do in the current environment. So the summary you described as simplistic is exactly right.
I'm not trying to be sort of glass half full or empty here. It's just, I mean your comments about driving cash and costs I think are generally welcome, and I think we appreciate, you know, it takes time. How happy are you though that when the volumes go up they won't just absorb cash to keep the comfort zone? And do you think, you know, costs are getting to the right place? I mean, I understand that you want to keep the pressure on, but is it a worry or is it just, you know?
I don't lie awake worrying about it, if that's what you mean. I think we'll make progress. I think if you work in a company that's shrinking, getting costs out is one thing because people see a clear and present danger. Getting them out in a growing company is about how do you manage the cost expansion relative to the growth. And as I said to someone earlier today, what we have been doing, which was not smart, was allowing our cost to grow ahead of the volume increase. In some areas, that's inevitably the case. Building Singapore, I don't need much of Singapore at the moment. I'm going to build 50 engines there this year, but at some point in the foreseeable future, we're building there one a day. So I have to let those costs increase ahead of the volume, because otherwise I haven't got capacity. But some of the what I call fixed costs apparently weren't fixed in this company. We've got to make sure that we nail those down. We've got to get ourselves into this cost mentality, is what I would say, Sandy, which is what we're grappling with, particularly in the civil business, as I was explaining earlier, so that we are well placed to be much more efficient, much more cost competitive, and therefore much more profitable, so we can invest in people, products, infrastructure, price, whatever it happens to be. That's what we're trying to do.
Okay. Great. Thanks ever so much.
Thank you.
As there are no further questions, gentlemen, may I please return the conference to you to close.
Thanks very much for joining us this morning. I hope you found the call useful. It's always a pleasure to talk to you every half year or so on the results. We look forward to speaking to you early in the next year about the full year results. Thanks very much.
This now concludes the call. Thank you all very much for attending. You may now disconnect your lines.